War is the Emperor's will, and lo! The only worth of man or woman is as blood to be spilled upon his golden altar.
Around him, the soldiers raised a sorrowful cry and pressed forwards into the guns of the foe. Celestine looked away as the slaughter grew bloody, and the image faded, became her reflection again.
"Are these the people you die for, my dear?"
it asked, sounding almost sympathetic.
"Surely they too are martyrs to the bloody creed of the Emperor you cling to. What difference can you make as just one more wasted life?"
"I do not have to answer you," said Celestine. "You are not me, and your lies will find no purchase upon my soul."
"I am nothing more than an expression of your own doubts,"
taunted her reflection.
"I do not doubt, for I have the Emperor to watch over me," said Celestine.
"The cripple, the cadaver, locked forever in gilded repose, the careless would-be god, for whose obscene ambitions all of mankind has suffered for 10,000 years.
Hissed her reflection.
"That Emperor? He doesn't watch over you, Celestine, my dear. He is little more than a ravenous corpse."
With each utterance, Celestine's reflection filled the gaps in her memories. Yet what returned was horrifying, soul-destroying. Celestine remembered the Imperium, remembered how, with each new incarnation of herself, she had seen it darken and decay. The Emperor was trapped forever within his golden throne. The Chaos Gods sent fresh legions to assail mankind's domain with every passing day. And as the millennia ground past, so hope and courage were replaced by ignorance, fear, and oppression. Each recollection was like a physical blow, making her ears ring and spots dance before her eyes. She felt sick to her stomach, and for a moment it felt as though she might simply relinquish her grip upon the rock face and let herself drop. Her reflection's grin widened further, nearly splitting its head in two.
"You remember, do you not? You remember the Imperium you fight for? How worthless it all is! How pointless!"
"It is not pointless," spat Celestine. "There is strength yet in humanity. There is good. There are those worth saving."
As she said this, the image of the child flashed through her mind again, lost now, so far behind. Her reflection wavered, and Celestine saw a suggestion of ghostly images flicker in its place, of loyal warriors fighting on against the odds, of herself standing in their midst with the Emperor's light singing about her and her blade flashing in her hand. The harder she focused, the more the images resolved themselves, and the more of her memories slotted back into place. Celestine realized that, for every grim recollection that weighed her down, there was another memory of heroism and victory against the darkness that buoyed her up. The fires deep within the cliff face pulsed, and her reflection swam back to the fore. Its smile was gone, though its face was still subtly deformed.
"Do you remember how it all began for you?"
asked her reflection, brows drawing down into a scowl.
"Would you like to remember? Allow me to help."
Its image wavered again, and now Celestine saw a corridor within a fortress. It was tilted and part ruptured, mortar spilling in where one wall had collapsed. Flames danced, smoke billowed, and wounded men and women screamed for aid. Celestine saw herself amidst it all. No warrior, this woman. She wore a robe of brown and grey, imprinted with imperial aquilas in black and gold. She was crouched in the ruins, face bloodstained from a scalp wound, clothes and skin smeared with ash. She looked angry and fearful in equal measure, and Celestine felt again a ghost of the emotions she had felt that day.
"The last battle," she breathed. "The Emperor's palace."
"Yes,"
whispered her reflection. The bombardment. The evacuation that came far too late. You were less than a footnote that day, cast aside.
No, I was chosen, snarled Celestine, and the image before her rippled like a pool into which a stone had been hurled. A huge figure stood over Celestine, light shimmering from his magnificent armour to suffuse the corridor. Her crouch of fear became a protective stance, and for an instant she saw the suggestion of something beneath her, shielded by her body. Golden light reflected in her wide eyes. The image rippled again and the figure was gone. The scream of falling munitions filled the air, mingling with the despairing wails of human voices to create a cacophony of the damned. Explosions blossomed, and all-consuming flames roared along the passage. Celestine saw herself stare into the onrushing firestorm with a look of utter despair, her hair and robes flapping in the furnace wind, her skin blistering before the intense heat.
He left you to die,
hissed the voice of her reflection. Yet in that instant, Celestine knew her tormentor had slipped.
No, he gave me a task, she said. He gave me a choice, a duty, a purpose.
In the moment before the firestorm struck, the image shuddered again. Celestine's expression of terror shimmered away like the illusion it was, and she saw upon her face a look of such absolute determination that it made her heart swell with pride. Again there came the momentary suggestion of a shape beneath her, afforded the meagre shield of her body. Then flames consumed everything and the vision faded.
Your purpose is to suffer endlessly for the undeserving and the ungrateful,
spat the voice of her tormentor, whose image had now become a formless blur, centred around a leering maw.
You die and die and die again. You will die over and over until the ending of the universe and the final damnation of all. You will watch the stars perish in the blazing heavens, Celestine, and you will know that it was all for nothing.
Another image shimmered before her. Celestine clad in the tattered garb of the Repentia, a roaring eviscerator in her hands. Celestine falling amidst her failed sisters, her corpse lying amidst theirs, another wasted death. Celestine focused her mind, and the image rippled, revealing her chest still rising and falling as she clung instead to life, until her sisters found her and declared her survival miraculous.
I will be slain, and slain again, agreed Celestine. But each time I die, I will also live, and each time I live, I will fight. For that is my duty. That is my side of the bargain that was struck that day. And with each life, I will know satisfaction in service, and with each death, I will know contentment in acceptance. For with every battle fought and life given, I do my duty to the Emperor and his endless flock, and so do I come ever closer to my reward. With that, Celestine felt fresh strength fill her limbs. At the same time, her tormentor spat a frustrated curse and faded from view, smoke and fire vanishing deep into the cliffs and out of sight. Celestine looked up, and there, above her, she saw a ledge. In the same instant, she found herself staring into the large, dark eyes of the child she had left far below. The girl looked over the ledge for a bare instant, then ducked back, vanishing from Celestine's sight. The saint gritted her teeth and dragged herself upwards with limbs that burned and shuddered. She dug her gauntlets into the cliff face and hauled her armoured weight upwards in a series of lurching movements. She ignored the drop below her, the shapes moving in the murk, the rumble of thunder and flame amidst the clouds. She reached up again, and suddenly she was grasping the lip of the ledge.
She hauled, panting with effort, and pulled herself up and over. She rolled away from the drop and onto her back, where she lay, heart pounding, limbs burning, breath rushing in and out like a bellows.
Celestine!
The shout brought her up into a fighting crouch, her sword held ready despite the aching exhaustion of her limbs. She realized that the ledge was sizable, a crystal platform 50 feet across, and at its rear was a dark fissure. A cave mouth, she realized, leading into the cliff face. Between her and that dark rent knelt Purpose, her body leant forward and her head lying on a block of gore-stained brass. Faith stood off to one side, burning brands in hand, staring at Celestine for guidance. Over Purpose loomed a huge figure, massively muscled and easily 12 feet in height. The being was part armoured in dark red plates that were held to its otherwise naked form with brass chains. Its face was hidden behind a blank red helm that mounted curling ram's horns of huge size and bore a stylized skull rune upon its eyeless faceplate. Its skin was marred with scarification, repeating the skull rune over and over again, and in its hands it held a massive headsman's axe.
Order the blow, Celestine.
The axeman's voice rumbled out from behind its helm in an inhumanly deep snarl. This blade hung poised, ready to swing down and lop Purpose's head from her shoulders with a single blow. It took Celestine's tired mind a moment to realize that the figure was waiting on her word. Purpose looked up at her with red-rimmed eyes. Her bone mask was gone, lying shattered to one side. Revealed was the face of a tired old woman, weathered with sorrows and cares unnumbered. Tears tracked across her face.
I am sorry, Saint, said Purpose. I am sorry for all that I have put you through. I will not ask your forgiveness. I do not deserve it.
Where is the child? Panted Celestine, recovering her breath by degrees. Gone, said Faith. Gone where? She asked. Before Faith could answer, the hulking figure growled behind its helm and brandished its axe.
Order it!
It awaits your decision, but its patience is thin, said Purpose.
Celestine eyed the monstrous figure and felt nothing but revulsion. This was a creature of chaos, monstrous and tainted. Celestine felt anger at all that Purpose had put her through, the pain and danger she had subjected her to. The image rose again in her mind of Purpose with her blade to the girl's throat, and a wave of hate and fury rose up within her. For the barest of instants, Celestine wanted to command the monstrous figure to strike. Yet in that same instant, Celestine realized that the anger she felt was not her own.
Purpose, I know your true name, and it is Duty, said Celestine. And if the dark gods think for an instant that I would allow such a tainted abomination as this to act as the arbiter of my will, then they prove only that they cannot possibly understand the depths of my faith, or my conviction, or my strength.
With that, she sprang. The monstrous executioner swung its blade down with all its might, and Duty screamed. There was a resounding clang as Celestine's blade stopped the executioner's axe, bare inches above the nape of Duty's neck.
I defy you, as I defy all the works of the dark gods, snarled Celestine,
arms shuddering with the effort of holding back the executioner's blade.
I accept my duty, for it is every bit as much a part of who I am as is my faith, and I spit upon you and all your filthy kind.
Servos whined in her armour as she pivoted, forcing her blade upwards and driving the executioner's weapon back. The monstrous warrior roared, the sound muffled by the faceplate of its helm, and swung its weapon back for another blow. Celestine grabbed Duty by one shoulder and hurled her unceremoniously aside before diving the other way. The monster's axe fell and struck the brass block. Sparks spat from the impact, but both Celestine and Duty were unharmed. With a rumbling growl, the executioner wrenched its weapon out of the block and lumbered towards Celestine. Wingless, her back to the empty void, she took up a fighting stance. She was exhausted from the climb, and this hulking monster shuddered with unnatural might. Yet perhaps if she could goad it into a reckless charge, she might lunge aside and send it pitching off the ledge to its doom. The executioner staggered as a raging blast of fire struck it from the side. Celestine saw Faith advancing on the monster, burning brands raised and a look of murderous determination on her face. The executioner spun her way, then staggered as another pyrotechnic blast hit it from the other direction. It spun again, flesh blackened, and Celestine saw that Duty was on her feet and wielding burning brands of her own. Wings had burst from the woman's back, shimmering in the colours of ruby and obsidian. Celestine didn't waste her chance. She charged, ramming her blade through the executioner's back, its tip aimed for the heart. The monster bellowed in pain, stiffening as though electrocuted as her sword point exploded from its chest in a shower of blood. Muscles rippled under warm, pale skin as the executioner tried to turn. Celestine cried out as her blade was wrenched from her hands. She threw herself flat as the enormous axe thrummed over her head, then rolled away as the executioner's foot slammed down where her head had been. Flames billowed again as both Faith and Duty hammered the monster with their burning brands, and it staggered with another muffled roar. Blood showered from around both point and hilt of Celestine's sword, and the executioner stumbled. Surging to her feet, Celestine dodged another almighty axe swing and grabbed the hilt of her sword. With a grunt of exertion, she dragged the blade free.
"Emperor, guide my blade!"
she cried, then spun on her heel and whipped her sword in a hissing arc. It struck low and hacked through the executioner's right knee, severing the leg entirely. The creature gave another roar of mindless fury, but it was powerless to stop itself toppling sideways and crashing to the ground. Blood jetted from the stump of its severed leg and poured from the holes in its back and chest. Still, it tried to drag itself towards Celestine, axe clutched in one massive fist, eyeless face locked upon her. Faith and Duty strode closer and bathed the monster in flame until its flesh crackled and body fat spat and sizzled. Still, it crawled, emitting grunting snarls. Celestine eyed the ruined creature with disgust.
"Such are the wages of heresy,"
she intoned, raising her blade high.
"Such is the fate of all who defy the will of the Emperor."
With that, Celestine's blade whistled down and struck the monster's head from its shoulders. Molten gore jetted, spattering Celestine's greaves, and the axeman's remaining limbs drummed against the rock as though its body still fought against death. Only when she was quite sure that it had stopped moving and was finally, irrevocably slain, did Celestine allow herself to drop to her knees in exhaustion. Chapter 3. 412th day of the war, 1300 hours. Imperium Nihilus, planet Kofin, Mansate Crater Fields. LO722-6/LA633-4. Major Blaskane rode in a borrowed Torox armoured personnel carrier named Endurance. For the past 7 days, the vehicle had acted as his mobile command base, and Blaskane had to admit that, for a cramped and often sweaty metal box on tracks, he had become quite fond of the old girl. At night, when temperatures plunged, he had been glad of the vehicle's ability to pressurise and seal off the interior atmosphere. Now, though, with the midday suns beating down, he rode high in the vehicle's cupola with the hatch open and his cap off. Blaskane luxuriated in the simple pleasure of the wind blowing through his greasy hair, as the Torox rumbled along. If he was honest with himself, it was a rather pleasant surprise simply still being alive. Blaskane found his spirits disproportionately lifted by the act of still breathing. The view wasn't much to speak of course. It rarely was on Kovin. The planet was hard and scarred, a ball of rock and dust that had been deemed worthy of habitation only because of the rich mineral deposits running through its geological strata. Currently, the Crusade was advancing across a dusty plain under a hard blue sky, with not so much as a scad of underbrush or a jutting rock formation to break up the lifeless monotony. Endurance travelled near the head of the straggling column of tanks and soldiery that made up St. Celestine's Crusade. The vehicles were forced to move at marching pace, for there had not been enough armour to mobilise everyone, and so progress had been steady at best. Still, reflected Blaskane, they had been phenomenally fortunate thus far. Aside from a few scattered cult warbands and a single column of rusted renegade tanks, the Crusade had met no serious resistance in an entire week trekking through hostile territory.
"Nothing short of miraculous, really,"
he muttered to himself, and was surprised to find he meant it less acerbically than he had thought. Still, it unsettled him. In Blaskane's experience, an unseen foe was more dangerous than one stood proud before you. He had thought about convening quietly with the other Cadian officers to discuss their absent enemy, perhaps to arrange additional scouting parties, but he had put the decision off. Blaskane told himself this was because they couldn't spare the scouts. The truth was, he couldn't bear the thought that his doubts might be answered by warriors he had long respected, now spouting zealotry and talk of unquestioning faith. He could see her up there, at the very front of the marching column, the saint, flanked by her Gemini superior, striding along amidst the Adeptus Sororitas. She walked like everyone else, even though he had seen her fly with ease. The message wasn't lost on Blaskane. He felt a momentary twinge of guilt as he glanced back at the Cadian soldiers marching stolidly through the dust trail kicked up by his armoured personnel carrier. His reverie was broken by movement below him. Blaskane scooted back to make space as Cassigelt passed a Vox handset up to him.
"Captain Macklin for you, sir," said Cassigelt. "Sounds like trouble."
Macklin's Lehman Russ executioner, Sunderer, was halfway back down the column. The potent plasma tank was barely visible through his magnoculars amongst the dust clouds kicked up by the vehicles surrounding it.
"Thanks, Astrid,"
said Blaskane, taking the bulky handset and hitting the receive rune as his adjutant ducked back into the troop bay of the Torox.
"Captain Macklin, this is Major Blaskane receiving.
Chan, my scouts are reporting possible trouble up ahead,"
said Captain Macklin.
"What nature of peril comes our way?"
asked Blaskane, wondering to himself whether now, as he had suspected, the other boot was about to come crashing down.
"We're approaching the Mansate crater fields," said Macklin, "prime ambush territory, and we're only 100 miles shy of the Katmat Nul Mountains now."
"Closing in on Shambach against all odds," said Blaskane.
Shambach, the city of Ingots, was the ancient prayer city of Kovin, and served as both the planet's spiritual and mining capital. It resided in a rocky valley at the feet of holy Mount Imperator. Its blessed mines had been the richest on Kovin for over 1,000 years. It was also, according to the saint, the enemy's primary stronghold and the source of the corruption that had beset the planet. She wouldn't say how she knew this, of course, or what precisely the nature of that corruption was, and Blaskane had become increasingly infuriated over the previous 7 days with her firm insistence that he have faith and trust in the Emperor. Still, he reflected sourly, such blandishments seemed enough for everyone else, and he wasn't one to fight losing battles. Privately, Blaskane figured that dying beneath the guns of one traitor stronghold was much the same as dying beneath the guns of any other, and all would offer an equal chance to salvage some manpower and escape when matters inevitably went south.
Yes, but we'll never make the City of Ingots if we run and get slaughtered by enemy ambushers out here,
said Macklin, her regal tones snapping Blaskane back to the present.
The salamander crews are reporting huge renegade icons jutting from some of the craters.
Seems a bit blatant, said Blaskane.
Could just be scare tactics, heads on spikes, that sort of thing.
Perhaps,
said Macklin, sounding singularly unconvinced.
It could also portend some dark sorcery or other. Throne knows they've demonstrated ample aptitude for the conjuring of nightmares since this all began.
Well, thank the Emperor we've a saint on our side then, eh? Said Blaskane, before he could stop himself. He winced at the cold silence that hissed back to him over the vox.
For a man with the nous to rise to the rank of major within the Cadian military, you really can be a spectacular arse sometimes, Chan, said Macklin eventually.
That, Petronella, is beyond question, said Blaskane. He knew Captain Macklin well enough to know that so long as she subjected you to the odd biting insult, you were still on her right side.
Well, just see to it that such blasphemous twaddle doesn't reach the ears of the soldiery, she snapped. Or, Emperor forbid, the missionaries. If they were zealous before the saint's arrival, they're positively fanatical now. It's a powerful weapon, might even give us a fighting chance in this madness, but I believe it's made some of them dangerous.
Blaskane's thoughts jumped to one priest in particular, the rangy one with the wild eyebrows and the penchant for baiting the soldiery. He had to discipline the man 3 nights ago at camp when he heard him preaching fire and damnation for all. Since then he'd caught the priest's wild-eyed gaze fixed upon him more than once. It made him deeply uncomfortable.
"You will find no argument here," said Blaskane. "So what is the best course of action, in your opinion? Circumnavigate the crater field, or push on? What sort of delay are we talking about if we go around?"
"Substantial," replied Macklin. "But Chan, it isn't our decision, is it?"
Blaskane sighed heavily before keying the send rune again.
"No, Captain, it is not. Have you advised the saint?"
"I wanted to warn you first," she said. "But you know what she's going to say, don't you?"
"Press on, and let the Emperor guide our path," he said heavily.
"Precisely, and that tone of voice is why I wanted to give you a moment to adjust to the notion before I spread the word to Celestine, Tasker, and Velmarchand."
"Thank you, Petronella," said Blaskane.
"You're a damned good officer, Major Blaskane. I'm proud to serve under you, and I consider you a friend. But really, would a little more faith kill you?"
asked Macklin brusquely.
"He's sent us his living saint for throne's sake. What more indication do you need that the master of mankind still watches over us?"
Blaskane scowled, then shook his head and laughed mirthlessly. "Between you and I," he said, keeping his voice low, "I'm amazed there's a single Cadian left with any faith in the Emperor after the death of our world. She was there too, don't forget. She fought the Despoiler himself alongside Creed, and yet the Cadian gate still fell. After 10,000 years of resistance, it fell during our watch. With Celestine present at the death, might I add. There was no divine intervention that day, was there? No last-gasp route to salvation for the loyal folk of Cadia. Doesn't it make you feel angry, Petronella? Ashamed? Betrayed? How do you do it?"
"Major Blaskane, I would have thought it obvious," replied Macklin, the crackle of the vox making her tone hard for him to read. "It is only because of our faith in the Emperor that there are any Cadians left."
With that, she cut the vox link, leaving Major Blaskane to brood. He looked to the eastern horizon and saw that dark clouds were gathering in their path. Wisps of vapour coagulating unnaturally quickly into thunderheads that swallowed up the sky. The occluded light of the suns turned watery and grey. Blaskane pulled his cap back onto his head and set his jaw.
"Very well,"
he said grimly, and found himself hoping that there were enemies waiting for them up ahead. He had a sudden, powerful need to shoot something. Sister Superior Meritorious checked the clip on her bolter for a third time. Still full, she thought. Still clear, well oiled, all in good order. Even now, with all that beset her mind, she found her equipment drills came automatically. They were a touchstone, she supposed. Warriors stirred around her and a string of pips shot through the Vox network. "The Cadians and Asterosians have closed up their formation and unshrouded their weapons," observed Sister Penitence. "They are ready to advance into the crater fields. At last."
"That was impressively swift for so large a formation of soldiery, Sister," said Sister Absalom.
Penitence grunted in reply, clearly unimpressed. The crater fields lay dead ahead, the flat regularity of the plains broken and torn, where ancient asteroid impacts had ruptured the bedrock. Some of the craters had lips that rose several hundred feet into the air, like the severed slopes of dispossessed mountains. Others simply plunged away into dark pits. From the lips of many craters rose huge icons of chaos, towering iron shafts wrought on an industrial scale, supporting dark skull sigils the size of landing pads. Their lowering presence was beyond ominous, thought Meritorious. "The skies darken," she said, casting her eyes towards the heavens. Overhead, black clouds had gathered until the crusade found themselves mired in twilight gloom. Some of the Imperial tank crews had chosen to activate the stablights mounted on their turrets, and Meritorious found herself glad of their stark illumination.
"Faithful warriors of the Emperor,"
cried Saint Celestine from nearby, her voice vox amplified so that it rolled across the Imperial lines.
"We press on with prayers upon our lips and gladness in our hearts. Fear not the shadow on high, nor the symbols of the dark gods, nor any threat of foes ahead. The Emperor will test us in whatever way he sees fit, but I know that we shall all prevail, for we have true faith, and its light can illuminate any darkness."
Around Meritorious, her sisters raised a mighty cheer. She saw the faith shining in their eyes, the ferocity of their determination, and felt the gulf of loneliness widen around her. Self-loathing warred with anger and recrimination in Sister Meritorious's heart. How could she stand before a living saint of the Emperor and yet feel nothing? Why had this curse fallen upon her? Hard-eyed, she raised her voice to cheer as loud as any of them. She had a duty to lead these women into battle, and she would not be found wanting, no matter how clogged with ash her soul had become. Saint Celestine turned and advanced, her Gemini superior close at her side. At the same time, the Imperial Crusade force surged forwards amidst prayers and hymns, the snorting of tank exhausts and the massed tramp of boots.
10 miles of this terrain, give or take,
said Sister Absalom, as they strode out at the army's head. The Sisters of Battle formed a black and white armoured spearhead that would lead the push through to the other side of the crater fields.
Perhaps 3 hours loaded march through rough terrain. Do you think the enemy are out here, or have the icons simply made the Cadians paranoid?
Asked Sister Penitence.
We've seen scarce sign of resistance so far, said Sister Absalom. Perhaps their forces are far afield, fighting other Imperial holdouts of which we've no knowledge.
Or perhaps they fell upon Tanika Adul and are even now closing on our trail, said Sister Penitence darkly. The saint soars aloft. Surely she can just tell us if the enemy are lurking ahead.
She is not a literal angel, said Sister Meritorious,
her voice harder than she intended.
Even with that artificer pack upon her back, the saint would have to put herself dangerously out of position to scout the highest craters. Besides which, I would not wish to stray too close to those clouds, would you?
The first sparks of lightning were now crackling through the clouds overhead. A dry heaviness settled in the air, making everything feel close and charged. Corpuscent flickered across the towering chaos icons, making them appear unnaturally energized. Despite her words, Meritorious couldn't shake the traitorous feeling that the saint did know whether there were enemies out here, and had simply pushed on regardless. Thus it came as no shock to her when, an hour into their march, the groan of vast horns echoed out over the crater fields, and masses of silhouettes appeared upon the lips of the highest craters.
"The foe is here!"
shouted Meritorious, pressing the arming stud on her bolt gun.
"Look to your faith and your firearms, sisters! For the Emperor, get ready to fight!"
Alarm signals shot back along the tightly ranked columns of the Imperial advance. They crackled through vox channels. They flashed from tank to tank by means of raised hazard pennants. They echoed in the tight, disciplined barking of orders from Cadian sergeants. Blaskane heard most of them as he sat within the belly of his Torox with a headset clamped to his ear.
"I need numbers, enemy positioning," he said. "Are there any of them behind us?"
"Negative, sir," said Cassagilt, as information flowed into the vehicle's command console.
"Looks like two sizable forces emerging from craters here and here."
She jabbed at the console's rudimentary AuSpec screen with her finger. "No word from the rear guard of anyone moving behind us."
"Split the platoons and push them out to flanks," said Blaskane.
"Staggered firing lines with sightline priority to the heavy weapon squads. They've got bare slopes of rock to charge down. Let's punish them every step of the way."
"Yes, sir," said Cassagilt, and began disseminating his orders via vox. Meanwhile, Blaskane switched channels.
"Lieutenant Tasker, do you receive?"
"Receiving, Major,"
came Tasker's voice.
"You lot are in reserve," said Blaskane. "Hold the centre, watch our rear, and if the lines look like they're about to break, reinforce immediately."
"Yes, Major,"
said Tasker, sounding irritatingly upbeat as always. The lieutenant didn't help his case as he signed off with a heartfelt, "The Emperor protects!" Blaskane scowled as another booming horn blast echoed across the crater fields. He could hear the muffled sounds of tanks and infantry redeploying beyond the hull of his transport, and took a moment to feel thankful for good Cadian efficiency.
"Captain Macklin, Subduke Velmarchand, Sister Superior Meritorious, do you read?"
he asked, keying into the group command channel. Voices came back to him, and he heard battle hymnals being sung in the background.
"Major, the enemy are upon us!"
announced Velmarchand with altogether too much relish for Blaskane's tastes.
"I had noticed, thank you," replied Blaskane. "Macklin, Velmarchand, I'm spreading my soldiers out into firing lines. Deploy your armor squadrons along their back lines and lend supporting bombardment. We'll pound them to dust before they get anywhere near us."
"Major, respectfully, a solid armor charge to either flank could shatter them before they even get into small arms range," said Velmarchand. "The men are reporting mobs of minor cultists and turncoat planetary militia, and not a great deal of anything else."
"Doesn't that strike anyone as strange?"
asked Macklin.
"I know the ways of heretics are obscure at best, but they've had time to prepare for our arrival, and this is all they offer us."
She fed the vidfeed from her tank's turret optics through to their command screens. Blaskane watched the grainy image of several thousand screaming figures running pell-mell down the slope of a crater to the northern flank of the Imperial force. They were dashing headlong, miner's garb and defence trooper body armour daubed with bloody marks and ashen skull runes. Yet it was true, he thought. This was hardly a masterful ambush.
"There is more to this,"
came the voice of Sister Meritorious. She sounded grim, thought Blaskane, but that was nothing out of character.
"Look to the storm, the icons."
The image in Blaskane's monitor blurred and swung wildly as Macklin ordered her vox thief redirected. It settled again with one of the obscene icons slightly out of focus at its centre, and the black storm clouds heavy behind it.
"Throne,"
breathed Cassagelt as she peered over Blaskane's shoulder. The icon was flickering with streamers of unnatural light, and smoke was boiling up from somewhere near its base, out of sight behind the crater's mountainous lip. Meanwhile, the clouds themselves roiled unnaturally. Lightning flashed through them, and Blaskane's frown deepened as he realized it was crimson, the color of spilt blood. The enemy prepare to strike at us with deviltry from beyond the void. The saint's voice came suddenly through the command channel, and Blaskane realized she had been listening in the entire time. The thought made him feel obscurely guilty, though he hadn't been consciously excluding her from command decisions. At least, so he told himself.
"What should we do, saint?" asked Valmarchand. "Follow your major's orders and pray to the Emperor," said Celestine. "They have burned offerings and given sacrifice to the blood god, and that which they have set in motion cannot now be prevented. We can only endure with faith in our hearts. Remember, the Emperor's eye is upon us, and his protection is upon our souls."
With that, Celestine cut the link. Blaskane blinked.
"Well, you heard the saint,"
he said after a moment's pause.
"Still, if the Emperor protects, then he does it with good Cadian steel and massed Lasfire. So let's be about it. Captain, Subduke, you have your orders. Sister Superior, I assume your warriors will bolster our lines."
"We shall, Major," said Meritorious.
"For the Emperor! For the Emperor!"
chorused the officers, before setting to their duties with a will. Meritorious jogged into position, her remaining Celestians flanking her. One of her battle sisters raised a reliquary on a banner pole at their backs, leading the Cadian soldiery around them in a bellicose battle prayer. Cadian squads ranged away to either side of the sisters' position, their lasguns sending hissing volleys up the crater slopes. More sororitas could be seen peppered along their lines, bolters roaring as they added their fire to the fusillade. The Cadian tanks loomed at their backs, and the dusty soil seemed to jump with the shockwaves as their cannons boomed again and again. Cultists charged towards them in a screaming mass and died with hideous rapidity. Explosions blossomed amongst their lines, hurling tumbling corpses through the air. Lasblasts and bolt shells snatched more men and women from their feet by the second.
"Their charge won't even reach our lines," said Penitence. "The heretics submit themselves to senseless slaughter."
"The saint says otherwise,"
said Meritorious, casting a glance back to where Celestine stood atop a Torox transport, her Gemini superior flanking her.
"There is some heretic sorcery at work here. Can you not feel it?"
She certainly could. Even as she raised her bolter and fired into the howling foe, the hairs were standing up on the back of her neck. Lightning cracked dry as firewood overhead and lurid red. Thunder rumbled like an angry god. The energies gathering around the icons danced faster. They made her feel nauseous to look upon.
"Mist!" shouted Acadian in surprise. "Mist! Rising from the dead!"
Meritorious saw he was right. The ragged remains of the enemy force were still pelting closer, snapping shots off from autoguns and las pistols as they charged. She had no doubt a similar spectacle was playing out on the southern flank. Yet her attention was captured not by the charging foe, but by the seething crimson vapours that rose from the dead behind them. The miasma grew thicker by the second, and as their guns continued to hammer and the cultists continued to fall, so it swirled and gathered.
"Sacrifices," she breathed. "They were ritual sacrifices, all of them."
The sky suddenly lit with a ferocious webwork of blood-red lightning blasts, and amidst a crash of furious thunder, a blood-red rain began to fall. At the same instant, searing bolts of energy leapt from the huge icons that loomed over the battlefield. They struck the mist like sparks struck amidst Promethean fumes, and a raging firestorm erupted upon the crater's slopes. Meritorious's eyes widened as she saw dark figures swim into view through the smoke and the fire. Horned heads rose. Bestial roars clamoured above the hammering of gunfire. A sulphurous wind howled down to batter the imperial lines.
"Gird your souls and stand your ground, servants of the Emperor," Meritorius cried, "for they have conjured demons."
Major Blaskane spun the hatch release and leapt from the side of his Torox, las pistol already in hand. He had heard the terror in the voices spilling through the vox. Then everything had been drowned out by a cacophony of howling, shrieking voices that had caused him to tear the vox set from his head with a snarl of pain. He had exchanged a look of horror with Casagilt. Then they had drawn their weapons. Blaskane's boots hit the dirt and, braving the hot red downpour that immediately drenched him, he raised his magnoculars to peer upslope into the infernos that raged to the north and south. Just as quickly he dropped the magnoculars with a spasm of horror, recoiling and managing only through sheer force of will not to vomit.
"Throne Almighty," he gasped. "What in the Emperor's name are those things? Monsters? Mutants?"
"Oh, Emperor, sir, this isn't rain. It's blood," said Casagelt in horror.
Blaskane tasted copper. He grabbed blood from his eyes in revulsion, felt it coursing hot and wet over his skin, saturating his uniform. He looked upslope again and saw the enemy, the true enemy, were now charging towards the imperial lines. Loping, long-legged creatures with red-scaled skin and horned heads brandished black blades as tall as a grown man. Monstrous hounds the size of horses raised baying howls as they barreled down the slopes. Massive brass monsters burst from the flames and surged forwards on clattering mechanical legs. Their flesh-metal forms twisting and writhing as they sprouted cannons and piston-driven claws. And there, amongst the masses, spreading vast bat-like wings as it loomed to its full height, was a nightmare-given living form. 30 feet tall or more, the demon lord had a nightmare approximation of a hound's visage and wore a brass helm crowned with jagged horns. In one huge fist it held a black-bladed battle-axe, in the other a coiling brass whip. Its body was all dark red muscle and brazen armour plates, and it stood upon gigantic hooves. Blaskane's thoughts leapt to the imperial scriptures that he had read in his youth, to their talk of warp spawn that bedeviled the imperial saints and devoured the souls of heretics. His mind rebelled at the notion that what they faced here might be no natural enemy at all, but rather some malefic manifestation from the beyond. It was impossible, surely. The worshippers of the dark gods were simply deluded, were they not? But then, he thought, an imperial angel led his forces to battle this day, and if he accepted that, truly accepted it, then could the demons of chaos not also be real, literal creatures? He quailed at the thought. The wicked creature threw back its head and gave a bellow of pure fury that swelled louder and louder by the moment. Cadians fell to their knees amidst the bloody downpour and screamed their terror. The imperial fusillade became ragged, some soldiers firing wild, others dropping their weapons from nerveless hands. Blaskane's vision swam as the roar filled his mind, and suddenly he was somewhere else. He stood by the runic panel that would close the lander's loading ramp. Flames filled the skies and the ground shook. Behind him, wounded soldiers moaned and prayed, but so few, so few. Out there amidst the apocalyptic ruins of the burning cityscape, he could see the people of Kasir Haslan striving desperately to reach their evacuation point. They reeled through the smoke, clutching bundles to their chests that he told himself were personal belongings and nothing more. Please, Emperor, they were nothing more. Flames roared. The flight crew screamed at him that they had to leave now before tectonic destabilization pitched the lander over and escape became impossible. Blaskane stopped listening. He watched the people struggle and falter as the ground shook and molten rock burst up amongst them. He looked back at the soldiers in his charge, and for one shocking, shameful moment, he thought of his own life, his own desire for escape. In that instant, he made his choice. It was his hand that pressed the runic panel. His voice he heard telling the flight crew to dust off at once and make for low orbit. His ears that heard the despairing screams of Cadian soldiers and citizens who were just yards from safety when he made his choice. His shame would stay with him for the rest of his days.
Demons surged down the crater slopes beneath a blackened sky. They screamed and howled as they fell upon the hapless Imperial soldiers. Blood sprayed and heads tumbled from shoulders as the demonic fiends plied their blades. Preacher Goffrey bellowed prayers to the Emperor as he fired his pistol full into the face of a needle-fanged monster. His shots blew craters in its foul visage, but it was the vehemence of his faith that truly sent it reeling. Goffrey fired again and again, sending the unclean being howling back into the void whence it came.
"Fight, you cowardly dogs, fight!"
he roared. Some of the soldiers around him complied, but they were spraying fire in blind panic. Most could not even manage that, stumbling or collapsing amidst the bloody rain, helpless against the onrushing foe. It had happened the moment the demon lord roared, thought Goffrey. Some fell curse was upon the Cadians and the Battle Sisters both, and he thought he knew its source. Unctorian Goffrey turned back to stare venomously at the true agent of the enemy. There she stood, atop an Imperial tank, her wings spread behind her and her blade in her hand. Her chosen sisters were on their knees, struggling with the same terrors that beset their comrades. Yet Celestine stood tall, her visage set as though carved from stone. Her eyes burned, and Goffrey saw tremors running through her limbs, even from this distance, sweat beading at her temples and running down her face. The blood rain hissed off the tank's hull, yet not a drop touched Saint Celestine. No vitae soiled her perfect form, thought Goffrey in disgust. Fools might take that for a miracle, for the Emperor's power shielding his living saint from the corruption of chaos. They might believe that she was doing battle with the onrushing demons on some level beyond the physical, in a form that could only be perceived through the senses of the Emperor's angels. Goffrey knew better. He saw the way reality shimmered like a haze around the saint. He witnessed, in fleeting after-images, the way the air boiled to flame around her, and the ground seemed for a moment to fall away so that she stood atop a mountain of splintered bone and broken skulls. She was a thing of the Empyrean, a being spat from the maw of the warp, time and time again. What was that but a demon? Thought Goffrey, feeling his emperor-given senses sing with the truth. Unnatural energies boiled from the saint just as they boiled from the demons of Khorne. Goffrey knew what she was, and with the absolute certainty of religious hatred, he reached for that which hung beneath his shirt. It was time. The Emperor had spoken. Then the saint leapt into motion, and Goffrey's moment was gone. The demon's roar filled Sister Meritorius's world. Sister Meritorius saw not a rain of blood, but of ashes. She felt agony within her chest and looked down to see the chestplate of her armor glowing with fiery heat. Meritorius tried to scream instead, coughing up a blackened cloud of smoke that plumed before her. She couldn't breathe, could barely see. She clawed at her chest and ripped away molten clots of armour that burned into the flesh of her fingers. Meritorius thumped to her knees, tortured chest heaving as her armour's breastplate burned away from beneath. She looked down at the scorched hole where her chest should have been, felt her sanity teeter at the sight of a blackened flesh crater full of embers that were already dying out. No heart. Just a charred ribcage full of ashes. Meritorious looked up, oily tears streaking her face, to see a vast hole burned in the skies high above. That was where the ashes fell from, she realized. Terra, burning, and her faith, burning her alive from the inside out along with it. All was ashes, thought Aniqua Meritorious. All was lost. A sudden flare of golden light broke through the suffocating vision. It bathed her like sunlight parting clouds, and as it did, the ashes billowed away, and her chest became whole once more. She sucked in a screaming gasp of air, and the tears that tracked down her cheeks were once again just tears. A figure slammed down beside her, and she looked up into the eyes of an angel. Saint, she gasped. A horned thing lunged, howling, and the saint sliced it in half at the waist. She spun and stabbed, laying another fiend low before her Gemini superior thumped down beside her on trails of flame and let fly. Their bolt pistols thundered and more demons came apart in sprays of gore and ichor. Sister Superior Meritorious, said Celestine as her hair danced in the furnace winds and a golden halo blazed at her temples. The Emperor's work remains before us. Will you fight beside me? Meritorious opened her mouth to reply, but no words would come. The light, she thought, that golden light that spilled from the saint like the rays of a blazing star. How could she have ever thought that light had gone out? Had she truly been so blind? Strength surging through her limbs, Sister Meritorious rose to her feet. Embers became sparks, sparks became flames. Aniqua Meritorious gave herself gladly to the fire as she felt it flow through her. I will, she said, and, raising her bolter, she let fly. Major Blaskane thought he saw a wall of fire sweeping across Cadia's ravaged surface. He had waited too long, and now they would all be killed. But then he saw it as the dawn, a golden sunrise that filled his senses and warmed him to his very core. As suddenly as it had gripped him, the vision was gone. Blaskane realized he was knelt in a bloody morass, Cassagelt slumped next to him, as their soldiers fought and died before them. Throne above, he cursed, surging to his feet. Blaskane snatched up his las pistol and stared hard-eyed at the horrific melee. He grasped the situation in moments, the same sharpness of strategic thought that had served him so well these last years, resurfacing amidst that golden glow. Though the Imperial soldiery outnumbered them dozens to one, the monster's trickery had robbed the Cadians of their advantage and allowed them to crash headlong into close combat. Huge, scale-fleshed hounds with brazen collars about their necks clamped their jaws around screaming soldiers and shook them like bloody rags. Hellish warriors leapt and spun amidst the Cadian ranks, lopping off heads with every sword blow. Grotesque flesh engines, the size of tanks, trampled through the Imperial lines, raking them with cannon fire, while barely 100 yards away, the demon's lord stomped and bellowed. Blaskane clamped down on the bowel-loosening terror that the monster evoked, wincing as he saw it swing its mighty axe and smash an Asterosian battle tank onto its side with a single blow.
Sir!
Cassagelt's voice was uncertain as she staggered to her feet.
Sir, what was... I saw...
Blaskane nodded, knowing that he must look as haunted as she. He had seen Cadia fall in flame and blood for a second time, and he thought that was the worst manifestation of the great enemy's malice he would ever witness. But now this... Now these abominations for which he could produce no rational explanation. Blaskane found himself hurled into a war between angels and demons. Adrift upon such maddened tides, he realized that clinging to his trust in strategy and tactics, firearms and ordnance, simply would not be enough to keep him afloat. Understanding dawned in Blaskane's mind, ushered in by his veteran's sense of expediency. He must stay sane and find a workable solution to an impossible situation, one that all the practical teachings of the Tactica Imperialis were singularly insufficient to provide. Thus, as so many had before him, though perhaps not in such stark and pragmatic terms, Major Charn Blaskane embraced the hope of salvation through faith. "It doesn't matter, Astrid," said Blaskane. "There's only one word for what we fight here. Demons, look to the saints' light for guidance, for it is a battle beyond mortal comprehension." Blaskane shook his head in mute amazement. Saint Celestine stood amidst the Cadian lines, towering over Sister Meritorius, with golden light radiating from her in waves. The saint swung her sword and a demon fell away, bifurcated. Another lunged at her and she drove her sword point through its skull before spinning and hurling its corpse away from her. Her Gemini superior kept fighting, their every shot rupturing another empiric entity and sending it screaming back into the void. As the golden light spilled from the living saint, so it dispelled whatever foul glamour had beset the Cadians. Soldiers staggered to their feet, blinking or praying or scrabbling for their guns. Stalled Lehman tanks shuddered as their crews restarted their engines and tracked their turrets to new firing solutions.
"Charn!"
came Captain Macklin's voice over the vox, woozy as though she'd just awoken.
"What in the Emperor's name was that?"
"Deviltry, I believe the saint called it,"
said Blaskane, feeling his anger surge. "Cruel visions meant to render us victims."
"Cadians will never be victims,"
he heard steel returning to her voice, her indignant anger matching his own.
"Cadia stands,"
snapped Blaskane, checking the load on his las pistol and wiping blood from his eyes.
"And so it shall forever, unto the ending of the Emperor's light,"
agreed Macklin.
"Now, if you'll excuse me, Major, I've got crews to shake into action."
"By all means,"
said Blaskane, feeling more himself by the moment, and furious.
He felt absolutely furious.
The worst and most difficult moment of his life had been turned into a weapon to undermine his steely Cadian discipline, to accuse him of unworthy cowardice. It was a violation of his mind and soul. Worse, it had cost the lives of dozens of his men, as he lolled in the dirt.
"No more,"
he snarled, grabbing a vox handset from inside the Torox and pulling it out on its unravelling cord. Fear still threatened to turn his legs to jelly and crush the breath in his chest, but Major Blaskane's anger and his newfound spark of faith were enough to drive the feelings back. No matter his personal terror, the Major thought, his soldiers must see only Cadian courage.
"Blaskane to all Cadian soldiery," he barked. "Get your sorry selves up out of the mud and open fire at once. Feel the saint's light on your souls. Flamer squads, move up and purge line breakers. Heavy weapons, target those combat walker beasts, the six-legged things with all the guns. Pray to the Emperor and push these monsters back. Cadia stands. The Emperor protects."
He saw his warriors rallying as the saint's light bathed them and his words cut through their terror and madness. Lasguns and plasma guns flashed. Grenades thumped. To his rear, tanks jumped as their cannons discharged, shells streaking through the bloody air to blow demon engines to pieces. Then the demon lord turned towards him, and Blaskane's blood ran